enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Hello over there. And welcome to a good squeeze. I don't know.
Welcome to a good squeeze. I'm Margo.
I'm August.
And here we are at a good squeeze studios.
Yep. And, you know, we try to squeeze a little James Bond into our lives. Mm-hmm. We explore the world of 007, introduce myself to different things, Margot's life to different things that incorporate old Jimmy Boy. And today's episode is going to be a little different.
It is going to be a little different. It is still very much inspired by Bond and driven in motivation to our relationship to Bond. But we are not discussing a Bond film. We are not discussing Bond music. We are discussing a movie that just came out called...
Sorry, swallowing. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a mouthful.
I know it's not Guy Fieri, it's Guy Ritchie. It's every time. I know it's not him, and then I'm like, it's him. Tell us why. Why are we discussing this film? What does it have to do with our podcast, with Bond, with anything?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. At face value, Guy Ritchie film, action movie with Henry Cavill and Alan Richardson. What does this have to do with James Bond? Well, this film is based on a true story, mm-hmm. based in big quotes, but it's from the classified, now declassified files of one Winston Churchill, mm-hmm. of an event, an espionage mission from World War II. And one of the factoring players in that mission was one Ian Fleming.
That's right. And it, in addition to that, not it didn't just chronicle the actual mission or, you know, anything like that, but it did highlight and put, like, you know, what do you call that?
Emphasis?
Front and center. Oh, okay. The man who inspired the character of Bond. Gus March Phillips or something. Something or other.
Yeah, and how fascinating was that? How fun was that for us as James Bond fans to go into this movie? And I don't know if you were in this boat. I chose not to watch a trailer. I didn't read about this movie. I didn't even know it was a period piece.
For you, that's a difficult thing to do. That's, you actually have to put effort into it, because typically speaking, you just naturally gravitate towards doing these things. The research, yeah. The trailer. Yeah. I live my life under a rock, so I just don't know when things are happening, what's coming out. You suggested we go to the movies, and we picked this movie, and it wasn't until after the movie that we were like, should we record an episode? Should we do something about this? Because it was so on brand with what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry, I interrupted. You were saying?
I mean, yeah, it squeezed some James Bond into our lives when we least expected it. And that's mm-hmm. what I was getting at was I knew nothing about this movie. So like near the beginning when, you know, Ian Fleming is introduced, you know, as a military figure, I was like, oh, wow, like Ian Fleming. And then at the end in the, you know, closing credits, it kind of mentions that this main character, Henry Cavill's character, who we were following this throughout the story, he is the historical figure who Ian Fleming roughly based his James Bond character on. Yeah. And we were like, oh, shit, well, we gotta... It felt, like, easy and natural to be like, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was within the first 5 or 10 minutes of the film. All the players are introduced, and you hear the one actor who portrays, you know, our good friend Ian Fleming say, I'm Ian Fleming, Captain Fleming. And we were like, what the fuck? Like, we couldn't believe it. We were like, whoa, mm-hmm. serendipity. What are the odds? The odds were pretty high, but they were still there. Yeah, it was really cool because we had a wonderful, let's set the scene. We have terrible luck when it comes to movie theater audiences, and I'm sure a lot of our movie buff listeners and or friends would agree. You go to the movie theaters, there's always going to be somebody on their phone, somebody talking, somebody just acting like it's their living room, doing whatever, ruining the movie for others. This movie's been out for about 3 weeks now, and we went to see it on a Sunday night. We had one other dude in the theater. It was perfect. They were quiet. We were quiet. We were watching the movie, and we were so immersed because nothing took us out of it. It was just one giant screen. a giant screen, us and one rando who might as well just not been there, because it was so quiet, it was so perfect. It was exactly what we wanted from a movie watching experience.
Mm-hmm. And we sat there munching candy,
mm-hmm.
drinking diet sodas
from Five Below.
Okay, don't reveal the secret now.
I mean, well, yeah. All 12 of you.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good time at the movies, not only for like that painted picture, but the movie itself. It was just a good time.
Yeah.
At the movies for us and what we like, and
it was a classic Guy Ritchie film. Mm-hmm. It was fast-paced, bright, very, I don't even want to say like British, but very like, you know, you got a lot of that, like, what do you call it? A lot of buff dudes and hot women doing really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Really, really cool stuff. This wasn't no Michael Bay, bang, bang, pew, pew. This was, every step was thought through methodically. It was so intentional. It was brilliant. And maybe I'm coming off the high of like, no one was talking in the movie theater, but it was fundamentally a great film.
Yeah, yeah. And I was saying this to Margot coming out of the theater. Guy Ritchie, for me in my life, is like underrated. Mm-hmm. Like I forget to, you know, not only mention him, but like I really enjoy all the films I've seen of his. And I haven't seen all of them, but it makes me excited to seek them out. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen your Snatch. I've seen... Well, whoops.
What?
I've seen Snatch. I've seen...
Oh, yeah, you're not lying.
Sherlock Holmes. You know, I've seen...
The Gentleman, Wrath of Man. Yeah.
But that's been about it. And I've really enjoyed those films. And I know he's made some, like... Not, I won't say questionable ones, but like Aladdin he made, you know, for example.
Did he?
He did. It was an odd choice, but hey, it made $1 billion.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has films called like Rock and Rolla and... Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and some films that came out last year, The Covenant, yeah. and Operation Fortune, and there's that new show, The Gentlemen's, what mm-hmm. have you. I really like his stuff, and I was excited to see this movie. Life happens. We weren't able to get there right away, right. but it turned out in our favor,
yeah,
seeing this
off.
Movie. Yeah.
What was really cool, coming out of the film, the first thing I told you was there's one genre of movie I will never get tired of. I will never get sick of. And I think most people would agree. It's killing Nazi movies. Killing Nazis can't go wrong. They always make him about as useful as stormtroopers in Star Wars. They don't know how to shoot and you just kill them. Just wipe them out. Because nobody has a problem with that. Kill the Nazis. Do it. And this movie did it. In a way that I feel like he ran a risk, because it's hard not to compare this movie to Inglourious Basterds. But he did a really good job of highlighting that this was a real mission with real stakes, real people involved. He dramatized it, I think, to perfection. And it was just a whole lot of fun. Yeah, that was like first impressions of this movie. And it had a lot of Bond parallels. You know what I mean? He did a really good job of highlighting this is what Ian Fleming saw in this mission, and this is what he saw in this individual, and this is how he came up with Bond. You could see a lot of parallels. Also, this was most certainly Henry Cavill's audition tape for Bond. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Or Guy Ritchie's audition tape for Let Me Direct a Bond
yeah,
film.
They were both like, well, we really want to do it, so let's just make something similar so they have to choose us.
On that note, you and I definitely need to, and maybe talk about it like we're talking about this film, we need to watch The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is also a Guy Ritchie film starring Henry Cavill, which everyone says is the real audition tape for a James Bond film.
When did it come out?
2015, 2016.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did start it once. That's a tale for another time. But I can definitely see why people are like, this is why he should be Bond. I've wanted Henry Cavill to be Bond for years. Mm-hmm. I don't think that'll ever happen nowadays. But... You know, one can dream, one can hope, especially after seeing a film like we did where, yeah. like, he just, like, has the charisma, has the look. If Bond had a beard and a mustache like Henry Cavill does in this film, I'd be okay with
it. He disappeared in that role. I didn't know it was Henry Cavill. I didn't even know it was him. I was like, who is that handsome gentleman? You're like, that's freaking Superman. I was like, oh, whoops. Yeah, you had the guy from BMS, Blue Mountain State. Uh-huh. What's his name? He played Anders.
Alan Richardson.
Thank you. Yeah, the freaking pound cake of a man.
Oh my God, yeah.
God took his time on that one. He
was the most unrealistic thing in this, like, almost over-exaggerated action movie, because people don't get that big, and people in World War II didn't have that perfect of white teeth.
Yeah. He looked
especially
like
the British.
Yeah. Well, he's not British, he's Swedish.
He's Danish.
Danish, that's right. They have excellent dental hygiene. He looked like an action figure. Like, all his limbs were moved independently in a way that was just maintained the tone. And you don't think he's real. He makes me believe in the simulation. He makes me believe in the simulation.
We were out and about yesterday, and we came upon a Cybertruck. And this will date our episode in the future, because people were like, oh, we saw a Cybertruck, and it was crazy. I've seen pictures of those things, but seeing it in person, like you said, is like, it makes me think the simulation's real.
Yeah, it looks like...
my brain glitched looking at it.
What's that type of animation style, like Banjo-Kazooie?
Like Polygon.
Yeah, there you go. It just looked like it. It looked like they didn't finish like whatever they were coding.
The truck looked like N64 graphics.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's what it is. With, you know, throw what's his face BMS boy in there, and
you say that, I'm like, know, what the hell are you talking about?
Thad.
Blue Mountain
what's
State.
His name,
Thad, or the
Alan,
actor's name,
Alan
Richardson.
God, Alan Richardson. All right, that is a Danish name.
But yeah, Henry Cavill in this, like, kind of casual, like, and that's like part of the charm of this movie, is they casually conduct these missions, casually kill Nazis in brutal fashion.
Yeah.
This, like, walk and shoot, la di da di da, make a joke, make a laugh. They do.
Yeah.
Like, ha ha ha. except for Alan Richardson.
I should say there will be spoilers in this episode.
Of course.
If you haven't seen this movie, just stop and then come back to it and go see the movie, then come back here. Tell us what you think. DM us. Sorry. No, you're right. And Alan Richardson, though, played off that character so well. He didn't have a whole lot of lines. Not a whole lot of dialogue with this guy. But the way that they set up his character, him, like, wrapping that rope, like, tying it back up or whatever, and they're like, he wrestled bears as a youth and killed elk when he was bored. And you're like, okay, for sure, so he's gonna fuck up those Nazis. And I loved how they always set up, like, a convenient weapon for him, like, oh, there just happened to be an axe on that wall, so you might as well, like,
might as well pick that up and do something with it.
Do a dance, you know.
It almost seemed, I know he's based on a historical figure, I wonder if this was true, or like, he was very proficient with a bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that was like, oh, this person in history was really good with a bow and arrow and killed a lot of people with it. Or was it like, we just want him to be real sweet with a bow and arrow.
So cool.
And do like some crazy stuff, like stabbing people, pulling them out and shooting it.
We want to get him on Joe Rogan is what we want. We're going to give him a bow and arrow.
He was like Legolas, but on all the testosterone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that guy's roided up. He's got to be. But like in a healthy way, like where they found a way to do it. So it's like, oh, but your heart is as strong as ever, you know?
Yeah.
Grew three sizes that day. He was a sight to behold. He was an excellent add-on to that movie because he didn't exactly carry the plot or anything. And, you know, it's not like, well, that's the thing with, like, Guy Ritchie films. He doesn't have necessarily one key component, one key character that drives the plot. It's all of them. He has a plot, the characters there's an end goal, and all the characters work together to achieve it on separate timelines. And you actually talked about that last night to me, about how he plays with the timeline and how he plays with different perspectives of people.
Structure. He plays with structure. Yeah. And his editing, like, just as like a brief example, someone could be talking like, oh, I will go and do this, I will do that. And they're like talking to somebody, but it'll like cut to that person like physically doing it while he's still talking, like as a narration. He's not the first to do that, but he does it so well. He does it throughout his films. It's definitely like the style, what he brings to the table. Something, it might sound like a dig or a critique of the film. I didn't care, though. And here it is. There isn't a lot of character development in this movie. Therefore, like, one might not care about these characters mm-hmm. because there's no backstory. There's no, like, oh, I need to complete this mission because of this. Mm-hmm. Or I have this person at home. Or this happened to me in my past that you get to, like, see. But these characters are so charismatic and interesting and fun mm-hmm. that, like, you're along for the ride for that. Or in my opinion, it's the actor, too. Like I care about main dude Gus because his name was Gus. Now, yeah. I care about him because it was Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
I cared about... you know, the
Danish hammer. Or
yeah,
whatever.
The Danish hammer because he was big and he killed people with a bow and arrow.
I would say,
you know,
though,
I liked these characters. Therefore, mm-hmm. that was more than sufficient enough. Like, I didn't care. I didn't even think about it until later. I'm like, you know what? There wasn't a whole lot of meat to the bone, but it was still very, very satisfying.
I would say, though, for this film, it's not necessary.
No.
Again, it's a killing Nazi movie. So yeah. The thing is, they've already established, okay, Marjorie, her family, they were the first to go with the Gestapo. Or what was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When the, yeah, they were the first to go. So already we know she lost her family to the Nazis. excuse me. The Danish hammer? Danish hammer. He also lost his brother, who got tortured by Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
This is why these Nazi movies work and why you don't have to focus too much on character development. Sorry, wait. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry too much about it because, one, we know the Nazis are the bad guys and we know what they did. We know what they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch this movie and you'd never heard of the Nazis, like, you know, maybe you'll be a little lost. But we all know what Nazis did. With this kind of movie, too, in terms of what the goal is, you want some hard knocks who aren't here to be like, oh, I remember when I was a child. Like, they need to go, like, blow yeah. up a boat. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
They need somebody to be undercover. This woman had to seduce a Nazi, what was he, general, captain,
yeah,
something like that. High ranking.
Yeah.
High ranking, and not just high ranking. Maliciously dangerous torturer for fun, like sadistic individual. And this woman had to put herself in physical danger and not like in every facet of that word to get to the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to happen, we don't have time for the sunset looks beautiful. No, don't look at me, please. Like at the end of the movie, they literally just, you know, the text at the end of a film that just kind of wraps up what happened afterwards, or, you know, they just listed all the accolades. Yeah, they're like, oh, and this person went on to do this. They all freaking killed it, by the way, spoiler alert. They all got medals and this and that. And then the main lady marries the main guy, and they just threw that in at the end. And guess what? I know why. Because they were both sick as hell. They're awesome. And there is like a creaking sound.
It's my chair.
Oh, it's your stool. I was like, what is that? The house is falling apart.
She was like, I really like your mustache. He's like, I really like yours.
Yeah.
And then they kissed.
That's a big mustache. To me, it didn't need that kind of explanation, that kind of character building. What we wanted was killing Nazis. And that's what they wanted to do in real life, too. I'm sure during the mission, there was no character development. They were already hard knocks who knew how to handle explosives, who knew how to handle weapons, and they had one goal, killing Nazis. I can't stop saying that. It's so much fun.
I know. And you know, you're saying it exactly how I'm thinking it. Like it's just not that type of movie, and nor does it need to be. But to that point, also, you mentioned the villain, how he's like this very intimidating, like high ranking. They even say in the movie something like he's worse than a Nazi.
Oh yeah.
But Ooh. If you think about it, and this goes with what we were saying with like there isn't a lot of character development and like things you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
You never see him do anything. You just hear about the stuff he does, and he is very intimidating, this villain.
You do see the end result.
You do.
I'm not going to say anything about it because that could trigger people, and I don't want to do that. But, yeah.
Absolutely. And then just like an on-the-nose comparison would be something like an Inglourious Basterds. What if, like, Shoshana, like at the incredible opening scene of Inglourious Basterds. What if you never saw that, and then it just like, you know, you get introduced to her at the movie theater, and it like says over text like, oh, this person was, you know, hunted by,
like in the Tarantino fashion where there's like, sure, the voiceover in the scenario.
Kind of like what they did about, because they did explain all the main characters and their vendetta, like why they are good for the team, why they hate Nazis, and why they would be perfect for this mission. They say it, and that's great, and that's perfect for this film, and exactly what it needed to be. I'm just making that comparison as far as like,
right,
as far
yeah.
as filmmaking backstories go, like Shoshana and Inglourious Basterds, you see why she has her vendetta.
Yeah,
this, it just tells you why they have their vendetta.
That's
which
right.
is
and, but it's a great example. Exactly, it's a great example of how you don't always need it, and you don't always need to skip the details. Like Inglourious Basterds, I would say, is one of the most perfect films of all time. I see no flaws with that movie. Sorry, I was just started thinking about Inglourious Basterds and I lost my train of thought. I was like, this is just such a good movie. But this kind of movie, it's fast paced. We don't have time for that. Even if he did do a backstory and he wanted to put in, I wouldn't be surprised if he did film he had some B-roll of their backgrounds, and then he just decided, you know what, we don't need it in there. I wouldn't be surprised, because he did that a lot in Snatch, of the few movies I've seen of his. I guess Snatch would be the only one that comes to mind where he does do that, where he does like show that like kind of B-roll of like the person's background and all that. But it just made sense, that vendetta against the Nazis and everything. Mm-hmm. And I do want to draw more of these comparisons to the Bond fandom, I guess, or not fandom, but the Bond culture. When you look at Ian Fleming's evil characters and the way they're portrayed on film, there are so many parallels to Nazis. You know what I mean? Like the whole, we're going to take over the world and we're just evil. That's it. We're just evil. The way that Nazis are portrayed is always, they're just evil. That, you know what they did. You know what they're going to do. They're going to hurt people. Evil. And those parallels are drawn in, I would say, all of the Bond films. You take a look at what a Bond villain looks like. If it was revealed at one point, like, oh, actually, they were Nazis the whole time, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes 100% sense.
Famously, there's a Bond villain, Max Zorin, who's played by Christopher Walken in A View to a Kill. Spoiler alert. It's revealed that he was a child of experimentation, of like a Nazi experimentation.
There you go.
He's like an insane Nazi experiment. Yeah.
Okay. Jeez, an insane Nazi experiment. That's crazy. But you can see where Ian Fleming got a lot of his inspiration. And the movie lays it out really well. You can tell they weren't going for, Guy Ritchie wasn't going for like a Bond parallel or anything, like I don't think so, but you could see it. You could see it's one dude, badass as hell, goes against orders, does his own thing, and wins every time. That's who does that sound like, you know? And it's just so cool because it kind of brings about like, what would Bond look like in the real world? Because the way that his stories are set are in the real world. He's a fantasy character, but he is set in our...
I have to save London. I have to save the world.
There you go. Yeah, it's all real, in theory. It's real to me, damn it. But that's the thing, is like, when you look at what Ian Fleming was exposed to during the war, and you see Bond's missions, and you see all the things that he had to do in order to accomplish his goal, this movie demonstrates that. We can't blow up the ship. Let's steal it then. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane. That's insane. These jumps in like point A, point B, point A, point B. We got to get there. If we have to stop by point C in order to get to point B, screw it. Let's do it. And it's that drive that Bond has, that like quick thinking, that I don't even know how to describe it, but it's just this like charisma that just occurs before your eyes, before you can even think about it, in like milliseconds. This movie has that. It's just charismatic dudes and a lady accomplishing an espionage goal. It's awesome. And frankly, that's Bond.
Yeah, and...
Do you just hold the whiskey in your mouth? Because I feel like you'll take a sip.
Yeah.
You'll hold it and then...
Yeah, I let it ruminate. I'm setting the mood with some scotch, right?
All right.
Anyway, this movie is like obviously has the in of Ian Fleming, in the in of the character or the historical figure that inspired the character of James Bond. That's the in for us to want to be like, hey, let's talk about this movie, not because it was awesome and it's, you know, it inspired us to want to talk about it, like, and it's associated with Bond. It has that in, but going forward in future episodes down the line, we might do something similar of movies that maybe don't necessarily have that in. Maybe like A Man from U.N.C.L.E. or The Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, like spy-esque movies. Movies that James Bond inspired to a degree. Which I think could be fun. This one did it for us because it reflects, like you said, like what James Bond is.
Yeah.
In a real life situation told through film that they exaggerated a lot of the action in the story, but you know, at the heart of it, it is like you said, like a James Bond story, like heroes, the mission, the girl, the villain. It is the blueprint of a Bond film, this ministry of ungentlemanly warfare.
The stakes were high too. That's the thing, is sometimes like good storytelling has high stakes. As soon as those are gone, you lose interest. And the Bond stories have high stakes. And again, knowing that it's not, I don't want to say the Bond's character and his accolades were based exclusively off of this particular mission. It's not, but you know, we get a good glimpse of what, you know, inspired Ian Fleming. What was I going to say? The stakes were really high. That villain, no joke. I mean, him putting out a cigarette by clutching it, like just crumpling it up like paper in his sweaty palm upon finding out that she's Jewish. Wild. Badass. It's terrifying. The stakes are high. You don't even want to know what he's going to do to her, considering he just did that to himself. Like, that's wild. Just this woman's composure and her quick thinking and their improvisational skills and every ally and the Bond ally. What's his name? Heron?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The I'm here to manipulate the bad guy. I'm here to support the good guys, but they will never know. You know what I mean? Like, and he has to be...
You care about him to the point where he's in peril. You're like, oh, no.
Oh, my God. I put my hand on my heart at one point. And I looked at you. I was like, I was so scared. I would have cried. I would have cried if he had passed in that. I love that he has passed. It's well, let's just assume all the viewers have seen, or listeners have seen the movie.
We told him to come back.
Yeah, when he puts the bomb, the detonator, in... where was it? The boiler room or something like that. And those three Nazis walk in on him. I was like, oh my God, they're going to torture him. They're going to do everything to him. And he just like whips out that gun.
Little gun
like
weasel.
Yeah. Ooh, love it. Ooh, that was like, what's his name? Christoph Waltz's character in Django, the like that.
Yeah.
And just, and then it jams. And he just keeps trying and trying. But what I love about the impact of this character, He was badass enough that he shot those two dudes. He was going for the third guy. That guy was scared enough by that little gun as he's like fumbling to get his arm or his gun. Even though the gun's jammed, he's not like, my turn, cheesy line. You know, he's like, oh, fuck, I gotta get him, I gotta get him. While Heron is trying to like unjam it and all that, and then he just stabs him. That's insane.
It was tense.
Badass. Oh, I put my hand on my heart and I looked at you. I was like, "Whew, thank God." Yeah, you care about him.
Yeah.
And again, the Bond ally. Now I don't know if he inspired a lot of these guys, but
we like a good Bond ally.
Hell yeah, it had
a great one.
If someone told me this was a Bond film, I'd be like, "Yeah, no, I believe it."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it was. Oh, and Churchill is M, which is so cool to think about.
Yeah, yeah, kind of think like, about like that.
Isn't
yeah.
that weird? Like, that probably was Fleming's inspiration for M, unless it was the other guy.
It was the guy whose literal, his rank was M. He was M.
He was major?
Yeah, they called him M, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, never mind then. I take it back.
Carrie Always.
Is that who he was? Okay.
M, yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, there's a literal M and he didn't even hide it. He was just like, M. Yeah. Really cool. Overall, there's so many parallels
to Bond.
There
was even someone named Moneypenny. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. So it turns out Hitler's real name is Blofeld.
that got me good.
Yeah, thank you.
But no, like the movie is awesome. It's badass. Mm. The music is badass.
Yeah. Oh, the music. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
That musical number.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she killed it. I don't know if that was her real voice or not, but she put on this performance that was seductive, badass, multilingual. I think it might have been her real voice. I think I read somewhere that she was, she like, it wasn't in the original script for her to start singing in German, but then she did.
Oh.
It was, I think it was her and Guy Ritchie who made that decision together last minute. But yeah, it was just, because in that moment, like, she has a straight and he has a royal flush. You know what I mean? Like, so she's got that confidence of like, I got him. But he's like, oh, but I got you. And you are just begging for her to look at him and put the pieces together. And she doesn't really necessarily until she sees the literal shackles. And then she's like, oh, wait, something's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie feels not like, and I really don't want to frame it as like, it's a copy of Inglourious Basterds. It's a copy of this. It's a copy of the Bond film. No, it is an homage to the Bond franchise. It's an homage. It really is. There's too many parallels. And the fact that he also made an effort to put into the, at the end of the movie, like Gus March Phillips or whatever. I don't know what his real name is, but that guy. I swear, I'm pretty sure that's him. He was the inspiration for the, it was like for the famous character, James Bond. It was like, oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
The cockiness, the womanizer, the I don't listen to.
Gus March Phillips.
Mario.
Got him.
Got him.
I'm like, yeah. Superman.
Yeah. I can't believe I didn't know that was Henry Cavill, but then I realized I've never seen a Henry Cavill film.
That's true.
I've never seen any of the Superman.
Him as Superman.
Him as Superman. And
or The Witcher or any of his other stuff. Mm-mm. You haven't seen it.
Unless he was like in a kid's movie randomly when I was a child, like, and I didn't speak English. And I was like, God, this is French actor. there were a lot, just side note, there were a lot of actors who I believed to be French when I was a kid because I had only seen them dubbed. And then they spoke English and I was like, what the fuck?
You lied to me. movie, though, it made me want to, like, smoke a pipe and chop wood.
Ooh, yeah. And in like, a tight-knit sweater and, like, a beanie that's rolled up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't tell you this because I was going to save it for our recording.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when I was out and about, I did stop at, a cigarette store. And I was like, do you have like a wood pipe like a tobacco pipe, like a classic pipe? And they're like, no, we got glass. I'm like, I know you do. I don't want the glass. I want the wood, the OG. Because I was like, I could get into smoking a pipe and chopping wood. I did come home and chop wood just because I wanted to.
If you smoke a pipe, I'll smoke a pipe with you, said the recovered tobacco addict. It's that movie makes you feel stuff, makes you want to be part of a covert covert mission.
And now here's my thoughts. Is it the greatest movie ever made?
Yes.
No. in my thoughts. No. But did I have a really good time watching it? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I judge how I rank movies based on rewatchability? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie, I was thinking about it, is my favorite movie of the year so far. And the only one I could put into that top spot is Dune Part 2. But, you know, honestly, Dune Part 2 is a masterpiece in science fiction. However, there's always this disconnect with me in Dune. Not that I just don't get it. I just don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I forgot about it as soon as I walked out of the theater. Me personally.
Yeah.
Me personally. But this movie I've been thinking about all night, all day.
Yeah. Not to like make this episode about Dune or anything, but a lot of these movies that are coming out, especially sci-fi films and stuff, it's a big pill to swallow because you've got, first off, they're like 3 hours long. That's enough for me to be like, okay, if I have to watch 101 Dalmatians three times, I'm good. Like, that's how long Dune is, essentially. And in 101 Dalmatians metric. But
Dune is like 20 minutes, not even 20 minutes longer than this movie.
Nah. And not only that, but they're like, the Kirkarkins have invaded the Schlumpa. And you're like, the fuck? Just use real words, you know, just say sand. I don't know, say drug, you know, it's just like the spice. It's a big pill to swallow. What's great about this movie, my boss described this kind of movie very perfectly. It's popcorn movie. You're just eating popcorn.
Hell yeah.
It's awesome. It's a popcorn movie. You get the popcorn, you go, you can't stop eating the popcorn because you're so invested in the movie. It's exciting. It's fun. You're not looking at the plot holes because you're hooked the entire time. That's what that movie was. If somebody in like 20 years, if I asked somebody like, what's their favorite movie? And they said this movie, I'd be like, fuck yeah, dude. That's awesome. That's a great movie. It's not the best movie, but it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was once again, a really good time at the movies. And mm-hmm. I really just appreciate it for that alone. Like, went to the movies, ate candy, had a good time, had a fun time. I laughed. I was on the edge of my seat. There was really like intense action and they're killing Nazis. And
yeah.
And it was a perfect theater experience because it was just you and I. That guy, he might as well not have been there. It was just you and me. Sometimes so it was just me.
Yeah.
it was a good time. Mm-hmm. I appreciated it for that. And it had a little squeeze of James Bond in there. So
now we got to do a verdict.
This is for the nostalgic only.
I think it's here's the thing. Is it not who's it for, but who is it going to please the best? The novice or the nostalgic of the Bond fandom?
I think the nostalgic would appreciate it more because of its ties to James Bond.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who maybe isn't involved in James Bond or has only seen like one or two. They might not care as much as far as like, oh, Ian Fleming's in this, or this person inspired James Bond. They might just be like, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But us, we're like, whoa.
Yeah. No, I agree. Even as a novice, the only way I would say it's for the novice is if like you're finally getting invested in a Bond, in the Bond franchise, and the Bond fan club. And then you see the parallels and you're like, like a freaking DiCaprio or whatever in Once Upon a Time. It belongs to the nostalgic. That's the verdict.
Cool.
Verdict is in. All right. Well, on that note, you guys can find us on social media, Instagram, at A Good Squeeze. Sorry, I almost forgot our stuff. Where we will regularly post updates on episodes and how, you know, we're squeezing a little James Bond into our lives. Follow us on Instagram. That's about it. And August, take it away.
Yeah. And, you know, you can listen to us where you're listening to us currently, but we're also everywhere else. Our main hub is Audio Boom. That's where it branches out to things like Spotify, to Google Play, to Apple Podcasts, to wherever you listen to your stuff. We are there.
That's right. Well, on that note, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this has been
A Good Squeeze.
Got him. I actually got really tired.
It's because a good squeeze is cozy. Yeah.
Let me get a sip of that. Is that that? Is that what I think it is?
Uh-uh.
Ah, is that dip your key in, dissolve it, Tom and Jerry poison?
Let that happen. One second. This is worth it. Thank you. That scotch.
Smoky.
Peavy.
Pee-pee. No.
Shall we?
We shall.